Huns, full disclosure, it's Sunday. We were at the Brits last night. We're feeling a little bit worse for wear.
We are not resting on the day of rest.
As you can probably tell by the sound of my croaky croakster. Got a bit of sore throat going on.
You weren't in the smoking area once last night, but
no,
you bloody sound like you were.
Well, we couldn't get in the smoking area because they barred people from it. And Kylie and Dua were being rushed on through. I think we should debrief on the whole night.
Yes, and I think the way that people see the Brits on TV is just so different to the way it's experienced once you're inside the O2 Arena.
Oh, 100%. So guys, we've been going to the Brits since about 2017. We've been every year, apart from when it was off for the pandemic, work-related, obviously. And while it is, of course, an incredible production, it's a massive spectacle. What's funny about being there is you do realise that you're just on a massive TV set.
Yeah.
Like you're there to almost be the audience for the TV experience.
Yes, it's really odd seeing these moments. Like, for instance, Maya Jama was on the podium, like in the middle of the O2 Arena and waiting to go on live TV. And she was like having her hair and makeup done. But there were these like really awkward moments where she was just stuck on the podium with nothing to do. The hair and makeup had been topped up and she was just like kind of like grinding and dancing.
I think because it's live. There are so many ad breaks. It's wild.
Yes.
Honestly, every 10 minutes there's an ad break when then suddenly everything cuts. And this strange man who I've Googled.
Who was that?
This guy who I swear to God is the same every year, and if he's not the same, it's someone with a similar kind of voice. He's like kind of an MC, and he's like meant to be like rallying the crowd to be like, come on guys, this is so exciting, we're all on live TV tonight, give a big cheer when we're back in 5, 4, 3 2, 1, and you've all got to be like woo to make it look like everyone's having a great time.
And you said to me last night was that they rope in all the Brit school students to make it look like they're having a wild time.
Yes,
below.
All the Brit school students are at the front, and I think they always bill it as a slightly charity of endeavour that they let all these young kids come. But actually, I feel like the purpose of them is somewhat to look like there's big crowds of people standing up having a great time, rather than just panning in on the celebrity like round tables where people look quite bored.
And it was quite empty. Like the seats above the celebrity tables were not full.
Yeah, the arena was less busy this year. Yeah. I thought.
Whenever we go, we do love putting our glasses on and peering down at the pit.
I didn't bring my glasses this year, which is very upsetting because it means I can barely see anything.
At one point I was having to take a video
zoom in
to the video to try and see who that girl was. But anyway, we like observing the celebs and what they're doing, which tables they're on,
especially when the cameras aren't rolling. Like last year, we spent the entire night watching Maya Jama chat to Keith Lemon. So Hans, if you didn't watch it, the Brits was hosted by two former guests of the podcast, along with Clara Amfo. So it was Roman Kemp, who has been on Straight Up.
He's very funny.
I love Roman. Go back and listen to our episode with him. We really, really enjoyed meeting him, didn't we?
We did.
And then Maya, of course, our number one hun.
Every time I see Maya in a kind of presenting environment, I have like a horrible recollection of the time I said the most obnoxious, accidentally obnoxious, like mortifying thing that just came out completely wrong. She was about to host the, I think, like red carpet for the GQ Men of the Year. And it was the first time GQ had like properly put money into like having a celeb host.
Yes, having talent.
Yes, because before it was just me. Me on the red carpet. Like when our Facebook Live shut, Jared Leto just shut down our Facebook Live. Like,
it was so chaotic. It's so funny that that used to be how content was done.
So I think, so she said to me something like, she was just kind of hovering in a corner about to start. And she was like, oh, I'm really nervous. And I said to her, oh, don't worry, babe, I did that job last year. And then I was like, oh my God, obviously, like, technically I did. Yeah. But it's because like, we had no money.
Aren't you some random journalist from GQ? I don't think you're actually a TV presenter, but okay.
As soon as I said it, I was like, I want to die. Anyway, it's fine. Dear. That was before she came on as a guest, so.
We've clawed it back.
Hopefully she didn't remember. I patronised Maya Jama, so shameful. Anyway.
Oh, I feel like I've told this story on the podcast before, but one of my really shameful red carpet moments was doing red carpet stuff at Men of the Year, and I asked Courtney Love, who do you think the performer's going to be tonight? Something. She was like, no, I don't want to do a weird question on that. Like, can you just tell me who's performing? I'm not playing this game. And I just wanted
so
to die.
Savage. Or Steve Coogan that told me to get better questions.
Yes.
When I was like, so who are you wearing? And he was like, do you really not have better questions than that? I was like, you are actually at a male fashion magazine launch party.
And it is a standard red carpet question.
Also, fuck off, Steve Coogan.
And Zendaya wouldn't go in the photo booth. She refused, I remember.
Well.
Didn't Chadwick postman tell you to go away as well?
I mean,
that thought just came back to me. Sorry to bring up that memory.
R.I.P. Chadwick.
I know, Chadwick. But he did tell you to get off that night,
my
didn't
only
he?
Personal memory of Chadwick is the fact that he was speaking to Pharrell in the middle of the room. And I said, hi, can you come to the social media booth? And he went, lady, can't you see we're having conversation? I was like, I really object to being called
slink
lady.
Away, like a mortified little
I was, but I was also really...
non-celeb.
But I was also really annoyed because I'm doing my job.
I have to say, I loved the promo video that Roman Kemp made with Maya and Clara. Have you seen it? It's like a riff on the infamous or now infamous Beckham scene with David chiming in terms of Victoria talking about growing up in a working class family.
Going, be honest.
Be honest, Victoria. So they've done this really fun take on it. And hats off to Roman for taking the piss out of himself. It's obviously a riff on him being a Nepo baby. So he sat there talking about how excited he is to present the Brits. And he's like, you know, it's pure hard graft that's got me where I am. Us three presenters are so similar. You know, we've all worked our asses off to get where we are. And then Clara and Maya just popped through the door like, be honest, Roman. What band was your dad in? And he's like, Spandau Ballet.
And they're like, very good.
And how much were your school fees? How much were they a term? And he's like, £17,000.
What school did he go to?
I don't know, but we did talk to him about it in our episode.
I now can't remember what it was.
He specifically did talk about it. And other famous people went there, like now famous. Do you remember KSI, I think, was in his year of school?
Yeah.
Random. But yeah, I liked the kind of tongue-in-cheek self-awareness. I think when Nepo babies can take the piss out of themselves... but yeah, I like the tongue-in-cheek self-awareness around being a Nepo baby. And I think he's good enough that it works. Like, he's actually really talented and he's a great presenter, so...
It's a much better way to handle it than, say, Ben Platt, who just shut an interview down after being asked if he was a Nepo baby. Way to draw attention to it.
We have always said as well, haven't we, what hard gig presenting the Brits is. We've noticed that over years. People like Mo Gilligan, who we absolutely love, Jack Whitehall, you know, on TV, they look like masters of their craft. And in person, when you're actually watching the Brits, you're like... Ooh, this is awkward and no one's laughing at your jokes and it feels quite stilted.
I have to say there were some absolute blinding awkward moments last night that we've got to get into. So my favourite one, I have to say, was when... and let me couch this in the fact that I am a huge fan of Mr. Bates versus a Post Office. I really loved that show on ITV. Guys, if you don't know, it's the dramatisation of the massive Post Office scandal where postmasters were falsely accused of stealing money. All because of some terrible...
Basically.
Horizon Software. Google it and watch it. So anyway, they got this one of the stars, Monica Dolan, who played one of the falsely accused postmasters, Joe Hamilton, to come on stage with Joe Hamilton and present the first award of the night, which was Song of the Year to Ray. And I would just like to know what the link is between Mr. Bates versus the Post Office and the Brits. Just question.
It just suddenly felt like you'd been thrown into this alternate reality.
Yeah, I was like, there's absolutely no correlation there other than just an awkward politicisation that doesn't feel authentic. And also, look, you know, Jo Hamilton is a former postmaster. She doesn't know what to say when she's getting up on stage at a national TV event. And Monica Dolan, even though she is an actor... wasn't much better because she said something truly astonishingly odd. She said, you were only meant to blow the bloody doors off, which, guys, is a line from The Italian Job, the 50-year-old Michael Caine
film.
It's
like a really famous Michael Caine quote.
But, like, totally lost on the millennial Gen Z audience.
But what is that Michael Caine quote to do with the Brits? I found that really confusing as to why she said it. Like, why did she say you were only meant to blow the bloody doors off?
We were already wondering why they were there, and then they say that. And no one laughed.
Just felt unhinged.
And I just do think the Brits isn't necessarily the best place to have these like kind of half-hearted political statements.
No, I think what really works at the Brits is when it's a fully blown political statement.
Yes.
So like when Dave performed Black with Fraser T. Smith that year and changed some of the lyrics to call Boris Johnson a real racist and acknowledge Windrush and Grenfell, that's actually powerful. I wasn't quite sure what they were trying to achieve there, even though I did really respect what Joe Hamilton said in terms of holding the government to account because they're saying they're paying postmasters, but they're actually not.
Well, they still haven't paid them, yeah.
But why is the Brits the place to say that? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I love when people really take kind of the establishment to task And I loved when Ray raised the issue of how songwriters are paid. I think what Ray's done so incredibly in the last 3 years is articulate how unfair the music industry is specifically towards songwriters.
Yeah. I think it for a big music event like that, make political statements that are really integral, they're really integrated within the music industry that the event is all about.
That feel relevant.
Yeah,
that
feel
music
relevant.
Industry.
Exactly. That's why what Dave did was so important, because race is integral to any conversations around the music industry and being an artist in Britain. But I don't understand why falsely accused postmasters was relevant here as much as let's definitely support them at every level.
Yeah, I don't want to be a bitch. Not to be a hater, as we love to say, but it just felt very incongruous with the overall event.
And what happened was that they both ended up looking awkward and weird, and it actually diluted the message because everyone was kind of laughing at them and it was just embarrassing for everyone. So actually it didn't do them any favours.
One other thing that I found a little bit awkward or maybe contrived was how much they were clearly trying to tap into Britain being like a drinking culture.
Yes.
There were so many references to alcohol and getting drunk. I felt like they were overplaying that to make it seem that the Brits is just such an incredibly wild, fun night. So when Roman Kemp did a shoe shot with Kylie...
Yeah, which clearly had water in, and also the shoes weren't the actual one she was wearing. They would have been like tied in under the table as a prop.
Yeah.
And it's just like that kind of wild British drunken loutish energy only works if it's real. So if you'd actually taken Kylie's actual shoe that had her foot in it and then put actual vodka in it, but that didn't happen. So it looked so fake and contrived, as you say. You know, I think maybe the Brits are trying to keep its really fun kind of wild energy
debaucherous image.
Like in the past, the Brits were much more interesting and people did actually get really drunk. Listen to our Jordan Stevens episode on that. But now I think people are a lot more tame on TV because obviously, you know, people can get cancelled or dragged for anything these days. So I think in terms of live TV, people are a lot more careful. Yeah. So I think it's kind of weird to create that energy. So last thing we'll say on the Brit ceremony itself, shout out to Ray. Although I must say that I did feel very sorry for her having to do 6 acceptance speeches at least.
Oh my good God. So Hans, if you don't know, Ray, former guest of the podcast as well, won 6 Brit Awards in one night, which has smashed the previous record of 4 held by Harry Styles, Adele and Blur.
Go Ray.
It's actually an amazing story. So if you don't know, 3 years ago, she actually was kind of lost in limbo, experiencing really a major label hell, not being able to release her debut album. And she publicly kind of lashed out with frustration at the situation on X, Twitter. She then was actually released from that record label, and in the last 3 years has just gone from strength to strength, and her career has completely flourished while she's been an independent artist. So it felt like such a triumphant night for her, like so validating for this woman who's been in the industry for 10 years. She put out her first song age 15, and she's now picking up awards for Best Album, Best Artist, Best Song, Songwriter, Best New Artist, R&B Act. The only category that she was nominated in and didn't win was Pop Act, which, of course, Dua Lipa won, and that was based on a public vote. One thing that is actually really positive, given the Brits' history, is that I think like 70% of winners were either female or non-binary, which is obviously a marked change from recent years.
That's fabulous.
And kind of reflective of what happened at the Grammys as well.
Yes.
So it's quite nice to see female artists getting their flowers.
Which is why we will continue to support and platform men on this podcast.
God. Okay.
Talking of...
Oh, one thing we should say very quickly that I feel like people don't know is that the Brits is actually hosted by the major labels.
Mm.
So it's kind of considered as this like impartial entity, but it's really not. The major labels like Sony and Universal take turns in hosting the event.
Yes, and that corporate vibe that you're talking about does interestingly also then rear its head in the after parties as well, which I thought would be less...
Yeah, lots of execs in tuxes, as well as all the musicians in jeans. All the different labels host after parties as well. We went to Universal last year, which was at 180 The Strand, which is like a Soho House venue. So this year we wanted to go to the Warner Party. The Warner Party is like kind of low-key the best as well, isn't it?
It's more exclusive.
It was at the Nomad Hotel and it was all designed by Katie Grand.
Yes, from Love Magazine. And there were many supermodels there. And I have to say, I've never felt shorter and perhaps less glamorous.
God, I felt so... plain.
Yeah, we were plain.
What's quite hard, guys, obviously at these events, most people have had their hair and makeup done. So if they're talent, obviously they look amazing. But equally, because it's such a big night, particularly for people that work in the music industry, they will have gone to absolute town. Like we were noticing, weren't we, how many women were wearing sequins. There are sequins everywhere.
Yeah.
And having my own natural, like curly air dried hair, a scrap of makeup on, and just like a black dress and boots, I just felt like such a pleb.
Like a plain Jane. Yes, and I was wearing a co-ord that I didn't particularly like. Hand painted my toenails. My curly girl method on the hair was not working for me.
You had to tie it up, didn't you?
I was like,
is it really greasy?
I did. I put jojoba oil in it last minute and I went to ham on it and I just looked like I hadn't washed my hair in like 4 days. So that was fun. However, the party itself was fab for the celeb spotting.
Oh, it was so good. We saw so many people. Do you know, I saw Thomas Straker, the slightly problematic
the
chef,
you know,
who got cancelled. Millie Piper, who looked stonking, didn't she?
She is having a moment.
We saw Jack Whitehall, who was probably, I imagine, quite pleased to not be on hosting duties and was just enjoying himself. He was very much just like mingling with everyone else, which is unusual because, as you touched on at the beginning of the episode, I think people have this perception of like showbiz events in that once you're in the inner circle and everyone's just mingling together. But it's not really like that. There is a divide between the talent or the celebs and then the normies.
There's VIP and then there's VVIP and VVVIP. I remember when we went to one of the parties, I think it was the Warner party at Tilson Firehouse. I remember finding it really weird. Well, not weird, but it was like, I didn't particularly like the way that there was like almost like a raised podium
a
bit
pin.
Yeah, with Stormzy and people like that on, which was like there was like a rope, you know, like you couldn't go there, but they were kind of above us. And I do think that's often the case when you go to these parties, like the VIPs are like on a raised bit looking down
and they are treated like gods. I mean, yeah, of course they would be, but the vibe is very much like part the crowd. Jenner and Kylie coming through. The smoking area is now locked off.
Yes.
No one's coming out because Jenner and Kylie have graced the outdoors with their presence.
It's like, sorry, the smoking area is meant to be a democratic place for everyone.
Actually, do you remember once at Chilton Firehouse, we did chat to Lily Allen for ages in the smoking area?
God, I don't even remember that. Are you sure that was me?
Yes.
Oh, no, that definitely wasn't me, babe. I would remember that. I've met the Kooks down there once, but...
Oh. I actually saw the lead singer of the Kooks once, completely stocious.
Oh, really?
At Gymkhana, the Indian restaurant.
Oh, really?
Random fact there for you. Anyway, back to the celebs, actually at the Warner party. Sorry for getting...
So Dua was with Callum.
And I will say, anecdotally, he's a very dashing guy. I can see what Dua sees in him.
And you know what, Cuthers? You have said it before.
Have I?
Yeah. I think we both said.
Oh my God, we need to stop perving on
people. We need to stop perving on people. However, I will say that Kylie is very short. What I found curious, looking around the event, was how miserable so many of the celebrities looked.
Yes, there are some people who are so clearly having a great time. So Jamie Winston, who's obviously a renowned party girl, was having the time of her life in her glittery, I want to call it hat, but headpiece.
Yes.
And then I would also say that Asa Butterfield of Sex Education fame was having a bloody great time. He was in that downstairs area dancing the night away.
When I interviewed him, he seemed like he was up for a good time. However, I did feel concerned that Monroe Bergdorf seemed to be really like lonely. I know.
Oh my goodness, I know. I actually felt really bad for her.
Yeah.
It's so funny because you think of these people as these untouchable celebrities and she's so stunning and has this incredible presence. But actually, we saw her standing by herself like at least 5 times, didn't we?
Which is weird because she's a huge celebrity and undoubtedly has lots of friends and contacts within the industry. So it genuinely was quite puzzling to me. And it was such a kind of glaring reminder of the discrepancy between life versus Instagram, because she was posting stuff from the event and it made it look like she was having a great time, but she quite clearly wasn't.
And actually, I know it's a slightly obvious thing to say, but I think it is so important that we're all really reminded of like Insta versus reality.
Yeah.
Because even Maya posted the other week from Milan Fashion Week about how shocked she was to see that the people that look like they're doing the most and have the greatest life on socials and are the most successful actually are the most miserable.
And if you're only going to events with the aim to capture content to further your own PR brand, then you are just not going to have a good time. Like, it's the people who are not filming stuff and who are just not thinking about how people are even perceiving them.
Have I told you that one of my resolutions this year is to be more spontaneous?
Do you know what, you haven't, but I definitely approve of that.
Well, I am glad, babe, because I'm sick to the back teeth, let me tell you, about creating doodle poll after doodle poll just to see my friends.
I hear you. Diary Tetris is one of the most annoying things about being a grown-up with a mobile phone.
Literally. However, as we both know, getting a last-minute dinner reservation in London in particular is a nightmare.
Comes a close second.
Exactly. But there is an app that is really helping with that issue. Amble, AMBL. Do you want to hear about it, babe?
I do. This definitely sounds intriguing.
Yes.
Tell me more.
So it's a London reservations app that saves so much time by reversing the way we discover and book bars and restaurants. The venues discover you.
Ooh, I love that. So only those with availability actually show up on the app.
Exactly. And the best thing about Amble is that you can input all these great filters, which means you can really curate what kind of restaurants that you want to come up. So you can choose on the vibe, whether it's a date night or a girl's dinner. You can choose whether you want live music, particular cuisine. You can set a certain price range. And then Amble shows you all the venues that meet your criteria and you can instantly book the venue that you want.
Okay, this sounds brilliant. It's essentially like having your own personal pocket concierge.
Exactly. And I've wanted one of those for years.
We love the bougie life.
We do. And it's such an effortless way to unlock London's hidden reservations by providing real-time availability. Usually I get so frustrated between different apps and websites to see what's available last minute and working out whether it suits what I want.
Oh, so annoying.
Literally, so this saves so much time.
Okay, that is an essential app for all of our fellow food and drink obsessives here in the capital. I am sold.
Yay! Head to the App Store and download Amble, that's spelled A-M-B-L, today. Thank you so much to our partner Amble. By the way, not to single out Monroe, I'm sure there are loads of celebrities there who probably looked like they were kind of awkward lemons.
What I found funny was when we left, seeing Sam Thompson getting papped like the biggest celeb of the night. There was fans waiting outside and screaming to take selfies with him. Sam Thompson has in the guy from Made in Chelsea who won I'm a Celeb.
Yes,
recently.
Of course. I also find it really funny that literally no matter how glam I ever look, as soon as you walk past all the paps, they just instinctually know to lower their cameras.
Oh, we're so clearly like plebs.
Like no one has even been like, should I just get a shot just in case?
No, I think it's pretty damn obvious based on the scrap of Bare Minerals tinted moisturiser we're wearing.
Hey, let's not put down my favourite.
No, I mean, I love it, but I don't think it screams celeb.
No, and I didn't have a good red lippy on. Could someone recommend a good red lippy?
Stop saying red. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to call you up on this now. That outfit is not red. It's claret.
What is it?
It's wine coloured. It's
burgundy.
More of a purple. It's like a burgundy, yeah.
I would say it was more red than purple.
I would say it's claret.
Well, I can't wear a purple lipstick.
No, but you wouldn't want a red. People are going to now suggest Lady Danger, like the MAC one that I gave to you yesterday.
Okay.
And that's a post-box red lipstick. So that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for
a red.
Red with a shade of purple to it.
Could someone recommend a good red with a shade of purple?
Do you know what
it
might work actually quite well? Have you seen all over TikTok and stuff, their lip stains are massive now. So it's the black stuff you put on and then you kind of peel it off or rub it off. That would probably look quite nice with that outfit.
And it doesn't, but I also need to be able to drink like 4 margs without it rubbing off.
Well, I think lip stain would be perfect for that.
Well, thank you so much for answering my question on air. However, if anyone has any other recommendations, let me know. Last thing on the topic of celebs having a good time at events, I would like to remind you and tell the listeners about when we saw Lewis Capaldi snogging the face of his girlfriend very merrily right in the middle of the room last year at the Universal party.
He was genuinely having such a great time.
Giving no shits. Go Louis.
Go Louis. Why?
Hold that.
Oh my God.
I indoctrinated you. Go Louis.
Go Louis. Actually, I also want to tell the honeys about our very cute bar visit before we went to the Brits. We had a gal day again because Ellie's birthday was the other week and we have a little tradition where we take the other for a nice little drinkaroo.
I was 31.
Yes, thank you for that. We went to Artesian, which is the bar at the Langham Hotel. The Langham Hotel is where we interviewed Billy Porter recently.
We love it.
Several of you reached out and asked what it's like as a hotel. It is gorge. Highly recommend going into the bar. It's just that brilliant mix of really kind of posh and elevated. You feel like it's a really special treat, but not pretentious.
They'll call you madam, but they also won't be annoying about it.
And they serve fried chicken.
Mm. They call you madam, but they serve fried chicken.
Yeah.
The bar itself was gorgeous. Like, I just wanted to stare at the bar.
The gold kind of mirror and
the
shelves.
Bottles.
Beautiful, isn't it? It's quite Art Deco.
Very Art Deco. So the drinks are very sophisticated. Like, if you're going on a special occasion or with your gals, you'd be like, this is like
A special spot.
But neither is it really fussy. I hate it when you go to all these bars and like, and this is my foam emulsion that is...
Yes, and actually, can you smell the smoke before you take a sip of the drink? However, it does feel really elevated. And if you're into that stuff, it's there. You know, the whole menu does have a brilliant theme. It's all about future-proofing, sustainability. Mm. All of that kind of kudos you can find. But what we loved is that the drinks are actually just really delicious and pretty unfussy.
I loved looking at your pea cocktail.
I loved the pea cocktail.
Which had
so much
peas
that I had
made
it twice.
Yes.
It was called peas.
Peas.
And it was like a kind of take on a Tom Collins, a long, fizzy, limey, delicious, just, oh, so refreshing. There was a really cute little like munch too on the top as the garnish.
With jellied peas in the middle.
Yeah, they weren't actual peas. They were just little like tasty balls of deliciousness. I don't even know.
And I had a very lovely take on an Aperol Spritz, a posh Aperol Spritz.
The sweet potato.
The sweet potato. We also love the Moringa, which is a take on a Marg. You know, we must always have.
That was what we had first, wasn't it? We can't not go in with the Margs first. In terms of the food, the bar menu is actually a collaboration with the very hot chef, Angelo Sutto. I mean, hot as in everyone's talking about him, not how he looks. Not another
we
comment.
We should contextualize that, knowing us.
And he has been inspired by the food of his Japanese heritage. His very well-known restaurant in Soho is called Humble Chicken. And his menu at Artesian is just chef's kiss.
Oh, it was jaw-dropping.
Fried chicken.
Oh, the smoked buttermilk chicken, the crispy pork bao bun sliders, and the katsu sandwich.
Oh, the katsu sando was so yummy. I also loved the tuna tataki.
I would say the food was as good as the drinks, and that is not always the case.
And very filling. Usually bar snacks can be a little bit meager, but we had a full meal out of our bar snacks.
We did.
It was fabulous. Can't recommend it enough. Guys, go and check it out if you're in London. If you want a lovely special treat.
Send us pics.
Let us know what you think.
So thank you so much to the Langham for hosting us as part of a press invite.
Els, ahead of Sleep Awareness Week, what I really actually want to know is how you sleep at night.
What a chilling question, Cathers. But actually, I do sleep quite well. Thank you for asking. So long as I don't look at screens before bed and so long as I have my earplugs because I live on a main road to the traffic deafening all night.
And would it be wildly presumptuous of me, perchance, to assume that those earplugs are from our Huns at Flare Audio?
Well, no, funnily enough, they are, Cathers.
Okay, so guys, as we all know, maintaining good sleep health is vital for your overall well-being, and Flare Audio's sleep earplugs are a game changer for light sleepers. They're tiny, unobtrusive, and designed with a super soft memory foam ball that molds to the shape of your ear. So, unlike most other earplugs, they never ever fall out.
They have countless five-star reviews from customers suffering with insomnia, ADHD, extreme sound sensitivities, and more. Plus, sleeps fit into any and all ear sizes. They come with replacement tips, and they start from just £4.95 at flareaudio.com.
A steal. So for more tips on sleep health, we also really recommend Natalie Pennicote-Collier's excellent book, Sleep Reset. Natalie is a clinical sleep therapist who was dubbed the insomnia expert by the Sunday Times. Trini Woodall's a fan. And she's a Flair partner. So because Natalie herself and her teenage children are neurodiverse, teaching young adults CBTI to help with their insomnia is a very personal mission of hers.
What a good mission. Also, what's good is her mantra, which is a good night's sleep actually starts each morning.
Thank you so much to Flair.
Right, Kath, quickly, before we move on to some of our other talking points, I need to tell you that there have been more rumours about Paul Mescal being a massive shagger. So Lottie Brandle's commissioned by The Fence magazine to go to the Old Queen's Head round the corner from the Almeida Theatre in North London, which is where he did Count on a Hot Tin Roof. And so after rehearsals and the productions, he would go for drinks at the pub. And this is where apparently lots of people would go home with him. So Lottie Brandle went to speak to managers of the pub and punters to see if they had shagged Paul Mescal.
Investigative. I like it.
Very investigative. And the reserved but more senior member of bar staff told her, yep, he comes here, he gets twatted, and then he leaves with a smile on his face.
Well, good for you, Paul. Having a nice time. That must have been like his local then.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, is that really prying into his private life, though, to have people from your local spilling secrets?
Well, I guess it was only his temporary local because it was only because of the theatre. I don't actually know where he lives. Although they tend to all live in North London, these celebs, don't they? Like Harry Styles lives in North London.
They live near Hampstead Heath, yes, don't they? In those big posh houses.
So then Lottie went into the bathroom to talk to girls about whether they had shagged Paul Mescal.
Stop.
And one of them said, we had a brief interaction when I met him here in November. He's a gorgeous guy. He'll probably be here this evening. He's always here if you come on a Thursday or Friday.
You heard it here first, Huns. Anyone hoping to catch themselves, Paul Mescal can catch down to, what was it? The Old Queen's Head.
The Old Queen's Head. The Old Queen's Head.
The Old Queen's Head.
The Old Queen's Head. Then another girl chimes in and says, I heard he was regularly on the pool here doing antics. She goes on to add, my friend shacked him. If anything, she said he was a gentleman. So clearly he didn't run away from her after their walk. As you'll remember, guys, in one of our previous episodes, we relayed the rumours that Paul Mescal goes on walks with his one-night stands and runs away from him. Runs away from
them.
Yeah. So then a third one said, he was here with a lot of confident Americans, but he was a bit shy. Apparently, he used to be a bit awkward when pulling girls, but now he sweetens the deal by buying them something from Gales in the morning.
Ooh.
So I think we can now piece together that they'll go on a walk via Gales, drink
a
coffee,
a little pastry.
Then he'll go and do a runner. And then lastly, a girl says that he was going around asking anyone who would listen if they would have a threesome with him.
Wow. Loving this insider intel.
So, yeah, more threesome. Paul. Poor Paul. But also, sounds like he's having a great time.
He does, actually. Why do I feel sorry for him? He's literally having threesomes left, right and centre. I'm sure that man is fine.
Go, Paul. So that's it. That's all I know.
Do you know what? That has just triggered the thought of recent rumours around Leonardo DiCaprio. Did you see them from the Danish model, former Playboy star?
Yes, I did see that.
Oh, she'd been on the cover of Danish Playboy.
And she rejected him.
She did. They had a kiss. She said it wasn't very good.
God, that really gave me the ick reading that.
Oh, it really gave me the ick. So guys, if you haven't seen, this model claims that she met Leo at a kind of secret club in LA where it's invite only. And she had caught eyes with him and then she was asked to come over to his private area by Leo's like henchman. Can't remember exactly what the job was, but she came over and she said that they had a kiss, but she declined his offer to go back with him to his place because he was too old and too weird.
And do you think as well she was also underwhelmed by the kiss?
Yes, I think she said it was bad.
What makes a good kiss is my question.
Well, I think that depends. But what I'm going to butcher her name now, but Heike Konings has said is that several of her model friends had actually had encounters with Leo and she had heard quite bad things about him. She says he has peculiar bedroom preferences and she says that one friend said he kept his earphones in during sex because he didn't want to hear her. And another said he even put a pillow on her head.
This really does corroborate stuff I've heard about Leo DiCaprio, I have to say. From, well, people that I know who kind of have been at those kind of after parties, I heard rumours that he will sometimes get girls to line up outside his hotel room and there'll often be like another celebrity kind of basically vetting them and like letting them in or not.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And also I've heard the headphones thing. I've heard that he listens to podcasts while he has sex. And I've also heard that he won't look at them and like it will always be doggy style.
Oh, creepy.
I know.
I do think as well it can't be a coincidence that he's dumped pretty much four girlfriends in the year that they've turned 25. That seems to be his thing. You know, he went out with Camilla Maroney. God, I'm going to say her surname wrong. You know who I mean. The gorgeous, gorgeous girl from Daisy and the Six. Camilla Monroe.
Yeah.
She was his long-term girlfriend, but he dumped her after she turned 25.
What the hell is going on?
I know he had a brief alleged frisson with Gigi Hadid, but she was clearly too old for him at 28.
And you know, he was papped with Lottie Moss recently.
Oh, and really?
And I think she's 26 now, isn't she?
Ooh, well, she'll be too old for him as well.
I would say if I was single, I would not have sex with Leonardo DiCaprio.
No.
Would you?
It's giving big red flags. It's quite sad how he's become very much the kind of sad stereotype of a middle-aged man that's a bit...
It's the baseball cap.
Yeah.
The baseball cap needs to go.
You know, hats off to him. Slight pun there by accident, but good for Leo being a climate campaigner. Don't love his predilection for very young women.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I want to talk to you about Poor Things because I have finally watched it.
I am so intrigued to hear your thoughts.
So, honeys, if you don't know, Poor Things was in the cinema earlier this year and it's now landed on Disney, so you can watch it from home if you want to.
In the comfort of your dressing gown.
Which, you know, is my preferred way to consume films.
Yes.
And actually, I should say quickly that Disney currently have a $1.99 a month offer.
Well, that is an offer we can't refuse.
I think that makes it well worth it because there's loads of other great shows on there. I'm going to talk about a couple. Okay, Poor Things. I loved Emma Stone. I think she's brilliant. I just don't know what I actually feel about the overall film. You know, I feel that you said, I loved it. And loads of other people I've spoken to have said that. I definitely did not feel that strongly about it. I have to say its artistic aims just weren't immediately clear to me. Is this a film about female sexual liberation?
Did you find it funny?
No.
Not funny at all?
No. So this is actually one of my issues with it. I agree that it's extravagantly peculiar. I agree that it's engaging in lots of ways. I think the set design is incredible. But I'm sorry to say I did not find it funny. I didn't laugh out loud once.
Not even in the scene where she dances like a lunatic with Mark Ruffalo.
No, because again, there was part of me that just felt that it felt off-key and weird. And I know that's me being probably a sensitive little snowflake. It's not that I was offended by the film, while I do understand why there are criticisms of it, whether it's, you know, this disagreement between it being a feminist film or like some kind of male gaze, like nymphomaniac fantasy. Mm. I came away from it conflicted.
That's really, and I have been following the discourse. Yes. Of course, there's discourse about everything these days. And I have now over-intellectualized it to the point where I think it's taken away from my original gut instinct enjoyment of the film. So since reading a lot about it, I'm like, oh God, now I feel more conflicted and like, should I have liked it? And is it problematic that I liked it?
So I know, I totally see why it has been so divisive.
Yeah.
But one thing that I've done since engaging with the discourse is looked back on it, and I said this about Saltburn, in a more favourable way.
Oh, interesting, the opposite.
So when
me.
I went and looked for all this context and discovered that it's based on a 1992 yeah. novel, that actually made me understand it more. So it's by the Scottish writer Alistair Gray. And what I actually now really love about it is, of course, watching it, I noticed the references to Frankenstein. But I think actually there are more narrative echoes than I first noticed with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And that is one of my all-time favourite books. I did it in A-level and I love Frankenstein. It's one of
Why
the most
do you love it
books.
So much?
Because it's all about how humans are made and, you know, nature versus nurture. And I loved, when I studied it, how much you empathise with the monster.
Yeah.
So Frankenstein's creation. You know, even that misperception that we've always had in pop culture of Frankenstein being the monster. He's
yes,
not. Frankenstein's
yeah.
the creator. And it just really tackled with such interesting ideas about what makes a human and kind of like ethical, religious dilemmas almost. I just loved it. And I think it was like very far ahead for its time.
We love that.
Obviously, Mary Shelley was one of the first feminists, I think, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
So that has made me actually feel more fondly about the film. I do think Emma Stone is amazing. And I totally get why every single reviewer has called her brave or courageous yeah. for taking on this role. Also, I found it quite interesting watching it with Marlon because he didn't have any context about what the film is actually about. So, of course, I'd spoken to you about it on air. I knew that she has the brain of her unborn fetus and that's why she's infantilized
yeah.
and, you know, going through this journey of learning how to be a human. But when before you figure that out in the film, Marlon was like, this is the most bizarre thing ever. But then you do find out what happens. And what I found quite funny was that Marlon still didn't feel that that was enough to qualify the narrative. He was like, but if she's meant to be a baby, then why the hell is she so sexual? This is really weird. Babies aren't sexual. We don't come into our own with our sexuality until we're older. So why on earth is this entire film about sexualizing a baby?
I know what you mean. I felt like as soon as you tried to hold it to kind of rationality,
like any types of semblance of reality.
Yes.
It's a hyper unrealistic film.
Yes. I think you have to really suspend disbelief throughout and not kind of ask too many questions.
Which, to be fair, the film definitely wants you to do.
Yeah,
that funny creature that's
silly.
Half goose, half dog.
Yes.
They're very much showing that this is a fantastical world.
But you're right. I do think one of the main criticisms has been that it is a bit of a male gaze fantasy, and that Yorgos Lanthimos, who is the director, who also did The Favourite, and if you remember The yes. Favourite had a lot of women going down on women. So I've heard people being like, why is Yorgos Lanthimos obsessed with women going down on women? Because she, again, Emma Stone does it on another woman in Poor Things as well. And actually I heard what one female friend said, that she thought that was really unnecessary, the kind of her suddenly becoming like a lesbian.
It felt
a
bit gratuitous at points, didn't
yeah.
it? And I know it's meant to be subversive, but there was also that bizarre scene that apparently was in fact shortened based on a certain advice that showed her having sex with a man in front of his young boys.
Yes, because the BBFC won't allow for a sex scene to be in the presence of children.
Yes. I don't love a steampunk aesthetic either.
No, I'm not a steampunk fan, but I did find it really fun
And I found the fisheye lens annoying.
Oh, see, I did like the whole style.
I felt like it was trying to be arty.
Yeah, see, it did feel quite natural. I don't like super arty films, but I thought it was kind of taking the piss out of itself enough. I thought it was a really silly film, rather than a pretentious film. So I think maybe I didn't.
See, I found it pretentious.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. One of my friends, Emma Louise Boynton, host of Sex Talks, said she was tempted to walk out of the cinema.
Interesting.
Yeah, because she found it so gross. She said the glamorization and the violence as well within the brothel was not okay. She found it quite misogynistic. And I think people have really taken issue with the brothel scenes, which glamorize sex work and make Bella seem like she has absolutely no qualm shagging these like really awful, quite violent, disgusting men.
Yeah. So there's an article in The Guardian from last month with the headline, "She's bound and gagged for laughs. Is Poor Things a feminist masterpiece or an offensive male sex fantasy?" And Samira Ahmed, who's presenter of The Front Row on BBC Radio 4 and a trustee of the Centre for Women's Justice, argues that it's a middle-aged straight man's fantasy about nymphomania. WrestleMania. She said she wanted to enjoy it. Obviously, Emma Stone, Mark Ruffalo, they're amazing. It's great seeing Mark Ruffalo, who's a genuine good guy activist, actually playing a cad. I hated his character.
Oh, I loved him.
I thought repulsive and weird and horrible.
I thought he was so funny.
I hated even just watching him embody that persona.
Oh, see, I really want him to get a supporting act Oscar for that.
I mean, he's very good, but he was making my skin crawl the entire time.
He's meant to be a gross character.
So Samira does point to the infant's brain thing that I just mentioned that made Marlon feel a little bit odd as well. She says that actually there's a consent issue for women with learning difficulties. That's a blazing red flag right there at the start. And then she says, she embarks on a voyage of self-discovery, better backstory, I mean, which leads quickly to an insatiable desire for sex with as many men as possible, one of the oldest abuser myths. In the 1970s, pornographers jumped on the women's liberation movement, claiming sexual liberation was essentially never saying no. As a work of fiction, Poor Things can explore anything it likes, but it's not feminist. Just because a woman chooses to do something doesn't make the act feminist. Feminists challenge the patriarchal system in which women's choices exist. Prostitution has always been romanticized by men in fiction, but it remains overwhelmingly the male exploitation of poor female bodies. Men, always much older and sometimes with visual disformities, raising questions about the degrading treatment of people with disabilities, use Bella's body without any attempt at foreplay. She's bound and gagged in a scene played for laughs. She also points to something that I noticed, which is there's never any acknowledgement of Bella menstruating or being able to get pregnant. She's having sex with all these men constantly and no one ever says anything about why she's not getting pregnant.
That's true.
I wondered whether the subtext is that by taking the unborn fetus out, Dr. God had removed her uterus or something. I don't know, but they never actually engage with that.
But then again, I think engaging in the real reality.
Yes, trying to root the film in realism, and that's not what it's about. So I think...
And I don't necessarily think the film is trying to be a feminist tale or even like a parable or anything like that. I don't think it's trying to necessarily have a strong moral message either way.
Samira says that there was a tagged on message about female genital mutilation being bad. I didn't actually even get that message from it. That's the first time that I've thought about that.
Oh.
Yeah. However, Charlotte Higgins, who's The Guardian's chief culture writer, does the counterpoint. And she basically says, it's obviously not a handbook advocating the transplanting of a newborn's brain into the head of a recently deceased adult woman, nor is it promoting paedophilia. Its relationship with realism is pretty heavily signalled from the off.
Exactly. Yeah, as you say, there's literally like half duck, half dog creatures.
Running around. Whereas I'm trying to shoehorn it into like, make it make sense. It's not meant to make sense.
That's the thing. And I do think that with all these films, and I guess that was the problem with Barbie to an extent, because people try to make too much of it, I reckon, from a feminist standpoint, is that not all these films have to have big messages about society and culture. Sometimes they're just silly and fun and a weird thought experiment. And also, I do think some of these arguments do undermine Emma Stone a bit as well. Like, she has had a really long partnership with Yorgos Lanthimos. I mean, she's done like 4 films with him. She's got like another 2 coming. Like, she has got agency.
No, I totally agree with that. I think arguing about the film's male gaze doesn't take her into account.
Yeah.
Emma Stone's is like artistic vision and how amazing she actually is and the involvement that she had with this entire project.
Yeah, and also another thing that my friend Livy said was that none of the men have power, which is true. Like, Bella does have the power over all these men.
Yeah, so in the Guardian piece that I've just talked about that goes through the whole discourse, David Thompson, who's a film critic, says, the men are like discarded condoms.
Yes, and I mean, Mark Ruffalo is an utter buffoon of a character.
Do you know what it is? And this isn't to actually criticise the film itself. I just don't think it was wildly me. I just didn't love it for that reason. It's not actually about it being inherently good or bad. As I say, I don't love the steampunk aesthetic. I watched Wonka recently with Timothée Chalamet. I have to say I enjoyed that more, even though Timothée Chalamet is not very good. He is the worst thing about
is
that film.
Is he actually a good actor?
I do think he's a good actor. Like, Call Me By Your Name, yes, he's brilliant, but he seemed way too childlike for me to be Wonka, even though, of course, he is meant to be a younger Wonka. Mm. I think the one thing that lets that film down is Timothée Chalamet's performance, I'm afraid to say.
I've only ever seen the, like, 80s Charlie and the Chocolate Factory film. I don't think I've even seen Johnny Depp.
One?
No. No, I haven't, weirdly. I will also say that I didn't particularly like Timothée Chalamet in Bones and All either. That's the cannibal film.
Oh, yeah.
You would hate that.
Yeah, going to watch that. That's definitely not very me, is it?
Basically, I think with Poor Things, if you don't find it funny, you're just not going to like
the film. Yeah, I think it was that. It was everyone's like, it's deliciously funny. Yeah. And these lines are so hilarious when they're delivered. I just didn't find them funny.
Yeah.
I was like, that's falling flat for me.
And then everything else falls flat as a result if you don't. I think that's this crucial.
Like, I definitely
part.
Didn't hate it. I just came away from it. God, what's wrong with me? Why does everyone else love this film, but I don't?
Also, it's far too long, didn't you think?
Oh, it dragged on and on and on. Do you need more than 2 hours of that? Actually, though, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but the ending was the best part for me.
Oh, really? See, that was a
bit... The denouement
actually
made the film for me.
I least liked that bit.
Funny.
We couldn't have more opposing views, Kathers.
We couldn't. Okay, so also on Disney, if you're going to get the $1.99 a month, not spawn,
which
just
I absolutely
saying,
am, yeah. But also can they spawn?
You've got to watch Extraordinary.
Okay.
So it's this new superhero series that is being touted as Fleabag meets The Boys. It has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's why I decided to watch it, because it's being critically adored. So it follows Jen, a woman living in London, in a world where everyone apart from her develops a superpower at the age of 18. So she's like 25 and she still hasn't developed her superpower. Everyone else has a superpower. And it's about her trying to find her superpower, because often people discover their superpowers after being in a kind of stressful life situation or meeting a moment of adversity. So she and her friends set about creating circumstances that might trigger her power coming on. Her friend that she lives with's power is taking on the voices of dead people. So she's used by like a corporate lawyers. She works in a lawyers as the admin person, but also then will speak to people about will settlements, literally speaking as the dead person through her.
Why? Sorry, as in
that's
why
her superpower.
No, sorry, as in why do they want their wills to be read out in the voice of their dead relative?
Well, for example, there's a scene where there's a disagreement with who the money is going to go to with inheritance, whether it's the wife or the children, like the adult children. And so she takes on the kind of persona of the man whose will it is, and he says, yeah, I want it going to the wife.
Oh, sorry, so it's not just a voice, like she literally channels what they want.
She's
their
like
thoughts.
Yes, she's literally possessed by them.
Right.
So she becomes possessed by ghosts and so can communicate with people.
Got it.
There's another guy whose superpower he alleges is that anyone he touches, they will orgasm. And he figured that out once giving his father a handshake.
Oh my God!
It's quite dirty.
I want to see this.
It's very Fleabag. I can see, and very The Boys. Like, that reference makes complete sense. Lucy Mangan, who, you know, I always love.
I was about to say,
Guardian,
what does Lucy Mangan think?
She didn't give it like the greatest review ever, but she called it Encanto meets the Derry Girls. So, you know, Encanto being
Derry
a Disney
Girls.
Film.
I've not seen that, but Derry Girls is
she says it's Derry Girls with superpowers.
Okay.
All in all, I'd just say Extraordinary is a really fun, easy watch.
Well, that is what I need, because I'm quite frankly quite hungover.
Yes, and it's set in London, which is fun. You know, I like when a superhero series is set somewhere that we recognise rather than being in America.
Yes, definitely going to watch that, babes. That sounds great.
Guys, we've said this before, but when it comes to our podcast partners, they really are an authentic recommendation from us to you. We genuinely wouldn't tell you to buy anything that we wouldn't tell our IRL friends to, which is why we are over the moon to be partnering yet again with our favourite adaptogenic coffee brand, London Nootropics.
Yes, and of course, we are armed with a juicy 20% discount code again. So just enter straight up, all one word, no caps, at the checkout at londonnootropics.com. We'll also put it in the show notes. And if you needed just a teeny bit more persuading on how and why adaptogenic coffee will completely change your day, then listen up.
Okay, so adaptogens are fungi and natural plant extracts that clinical studies have proven to have incredible effects on our well-being, from reducing anxiety to boosting energy and your immune system. Els and I have been converts for about a year now. We are obsessed. We drink one or two of Nootropics' 3 adaptogenic coffee blends every day, depending on whether we're wanting to feel super focused at work, tackle stress, or just go and do some exercise.
Exactly. So I start most mornings with the Mojo blend before heading to the gym. It's made with cordyceps mushroom, known to increase aerobic capacity and oxygen flow. So it naturally boosts strength, physical endurance and ATP, which, fun fact, is our energy molecule. It's actually a way healthier pre-workout than your average pre-workout supplement, which contains way too much caffeine and sweetness.
God, yes, they make me feel so jittery. I do not like those. Nootropics, on the other hand, are top stuff, thanks to being so rich in active compounds, a marker of quality in adaptogens, by the way, all of which are listed on the Nootropics website, so you know exactly what you're putting in your body. I must say also that Mojo is perfect for anyone battling with a bit of jet lag.
So true. And if you're worried about adaptogens tasting a little funky, do not worry. These blends, all freshly packaged in gorgeous individual sachets, taste fab. So head to londonnootropics.com and enter the code straight up at the checkout for that 20% off. That's straight up, all one word, no caps. Enjoy, guys. Right, Kathas, I want to finish talking more about The List by Yomi Adeyeke, because I started thinking, after your excellent review of her book, that it really reminded me of an actual list, an actual men in media list that went round particularly the American media in about 2018.
Ooh, I have wondered what the specific real life references are beyond, of course, just the Me Too movement.
Yes.
Tell me more.
Yes, because I was thinking that there was one of the men that we worked with at GQ was actually fired from his job because he had appeared on some kind of similar list.
Oh my God, now you're saying this. He was a freelancer.
Yes, he was a freelancer.
He was a regular freelancer and they had to cut ties with him because he was accused of being handsy and inappropriate to female journalists, right?
Exactly, and there were like news stories written about it.
How did I not remember this?
Yeah, and I remember there were like murmurings about it, and I don't know if it was on an actual list. For some reason, an Excel spreadsheet is coming to mind, but I now realise that I think that UK mini list or whatever it was triggered by the fact that there was a much bigger list called the Shitty Media Men list. That was crowdsourced anonymously on a Google spreadsheet in October 2017.
Oh my God, that is literally what happens in the list. She must have taken inspo.
I think she must have. So the list was created by 20-year-old Moira Donegan. She was a former assistant editor at the New Republic, and she had initially begun the spreadsheet anonymously, but it kind of had snowballed into something much bigger, but after like just 12 hours of being live.
This is so reminiscent of what happens in the list.
Yeah, so I think it started off as like a collection of like 10 names or something, but then once she opened up the settings so other women could add their names, by the end of that day there were 70 men on the spreadsheet. Some of them had been accused of rape and like physical harassment.
Again, there's 70 men on
really?
The list.
Oh my
yeah,
gosh.
So that's actually a knowing reference, I would say.
Knowing reference, yeah. And so she took it down because she was quite overwhelmed by like what she'd started. So Moira said at the time, when I made the document, I really wanted it to be accessible to women who would otherwise not be a part of Whisper networks, which I found really interesting. She said, women who don't happen to have friends who know about their new boss, or the woman who doesn't have the professional cachet to have been told already, you know, oh, don't work with that editor. Like, and it's so true that if you are in industry circles and you have that privilege of people warning you about who not to work with, like a lot of people, particularly women of colour, is what Morris says, don't have that like insider intel.
Yes. And also when the Me Too movement really took off steam, wasn't the argument that essentially conversations that had been happening in Whisper networks were now just taking place in a public forum?
Exactly. So then there was this really, like Moira herself was in this really odd predicament because she got an email from a Harper's magazine fact checker who was about to run an article on the list that had now like gone viral. It had been picked up by like everywhere. And they were going to name her as the creator of the list. And until then she'd been anonymous. So she was freaking out because she was worried that like so many men that had been on that list might like want to harm her.
But also she could be held responsible, right? If there was accusations of libel.
And there were following the list. So one guy took her to court and tellingly settled a few years later out of court for a six-figure sum.
Interesting. But yeah, so who had to pay the six-figure sum, her or him?
Him. Yeah, him, yeah. And the editor of the Paris Review lost his job, Laurie Stein. He voluntarily resigned after he was named. And I mean, there are literally quite a few men that had to leave their jobs. But yeah, so Moira was about to be named by Harper's and she just wanted to take control on her own. She wrote this really great personal essay for The Cut, which I recommend everyone go and read. And she writes, I realized I had created something that had grown rapidly beyond my control. I was overwhelmed and scared. That night I went to a friend's house to make dinner. And while I was there, I confided in her about my fears. I worried that managing the document would eventually put me in an uncomfortable position of needing to decide whose stories belonged there and whose didn't, which is exactly what you were tapping into, that whole like moral grey area.
Yeah, and who's the arbiter of the truth?
Exactly. And so she put her real name on that cut article. That's how everyone knew it was her. But she said that the fallout from naming herself really, really impacted her. She says, I lost friends, some who thought I'd been overzealous, others who thought I had not been zealous enough. I lost my job too. The fear of being exposed and the harassment that will inevitably follow has dominated my life since.
Wow.
I mean, the good news is I've checked like what she's doing now. She's got like 70,000 followers on Twitter and she writes like regularly for like The Guardian, has a Substack. So she's doing fine, but I can't imagine how stressful that must have been.
It's a huge thing. And actually Yomi does really investigate that in the book because it's actually, I think it's a former Guardian editor or something in the fictionalized version. That's the one that's compiled the list. And Yomi really reckons with the impact on her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's made me even more interested to read it now.
I can't wait. To hear your thoughts. We will report back.
Yes. Well, guys, we had originally planned to do... We had originally planned to record this as a very short half an hour episode because Kathleen's going away and we didn't want to leave you without anything.
Don't worry, we've got you guys covered. You will not be going without an episode at any point.
No, we are literally not taking a break. But anyway, we have a classic style managed to record for a very long time. Yeah. So you're getting a full length episode as planned. And the next week is our...
Finally,
the Big Kids Question two-parter. So those will be the next 2 weeks.
Let us know if there's anything you want to hear us talk about. Had a great listener message recently about an episode on Ozempic, which I would love to do.
That
Thoughts,
would be
honey?
Fab. Yeah. We've also had a suggestion from a very lovely person on Apple Reviews that we should start doing quick fire recommendations.
We hear you. We shall deliver. All right, guys. Have great weeks, whatever you're doing. Shoot us a DM at Straight Up Pod if you can. Please, please do rate, review and subscribe. Particularly welcome our written reviews on Apple.
Okay, bye.